Good afternoon, and welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Once again, if you're in the Sparkly Book, we're on page 164, last full paragraph. If you're in the second edition, it's page 131. First full paragraph, which is paragraph number 5. And if you're in the first edition, it's page 121, the last full paragraph. And it starts out with something we could actually laugh at. Do not be afraid of the ego. You could well say, why not? After all, it's, as we've discussed, a defense mechanism that does not have your interest at heart. And everything it does distracts you and is set to be a distraction from your awareness of truth, your awareness of your oneness with God. Why not be afraid of it? Many of you have thought, well, I wonder what my ego is going to do next. And many of you have wanted to say, the ego made me do it. Why not be afraid of the ego? It's simple. Because all the ego is you wearing a mask. Are you going to let the mask scare you? The one that you have designed so well to be awful and surprising and shocking? Are you going to be frightened by the mask you're wearing? Or are you going to remember that there's only one you and there's only one mind that you are, which you are either using well or using poorly? You won't be afraid of the ego if you remember what's behind the mask. It's you, the essential, real you, the son, the daughter of God. The presence of God and nothing else, even though you have crafted this mask. And then you've gotten so used to seeing it that you think it's you, not what's underneath the mask. And then because you can't avoid feeling guilty about wearing a mask, you think of the ego as objectively as something other than you. The ego made me do it. The ego, this thing that's separate from me, is influencing me. And then you're in the illusion. You're stuck until something or someone reminds you that all there is to the ego is you wearing a mask. Do not be afraid of the ego. It does depend on your mind, and as you made it by believing in it, so you can dispel it by withdrawing belief from it. The moment you remember that all there is to the ego is you wearing a mask, you take the power away from the mask, you take the power away from whatever interesting definition you've given to the ego that makes it seem as though it's different from you. And you're brought back into the clarity of knowing that you're the only one, let us say, in quotes, in authority, unquote, here. Not some ego that's controlling you and affecting you and turning everything to your disadvantage. Continuing, do not project the responsibility for your belief in it onto anyone else, or you will preserve the belief. Remember, the minute you give something away, you keep it. It's a law. It's the way it works. When you are willing to accept sole responsibility for the ego's existence yourself, you will have laid aside all anger and all attack, because they come from an attempt to project responsibility for your own errors. You use anger and attack to distract you from the fact that it's not your ego doing it, it's you doing it behind the mask, and dissociating yourself from the whole matter. But, continuing, having accepted the errors as yours, and the use of the word errors is good, but having accepted the deeds you've done as yours and not some ego out there, you're in a position to release them. Again, but having accepted the errors as yours, do not keep them. Well, now that sounds like you've got to give them away. But if you give them away, you keep them. No, there's a difference between projecting responsibility for what you've done on someone or something else and giving it away in that fashion, and not keeping them as it's described here. How do you not keep them? Give them over quickly to the Holy Spirit to be undone completely, so that all their effects will vanish from your minds and from the sonship as a whole. Okay, so here we're abandoning the idea that there is an ego that can do something to you, which you can call yours, by recognizing that there's only one mind right where you are, and there's only one you, and so therefore the ego is nothing more than you wearing a mask. And we've also got this something called the Holy Spirit, which you can talk about as though it's out there, and you can turn it over to the Holy Spirit, you can give it to the Holy Spirit, and yet we have found that the Holy Spirit is nothing more than your right mind. So let's be very clear here. And this is a further explanation of the meaning of singularity. There's only one thing going on, a singularity, the infinite or unlimited, unbounded conscious awareness that you are, which is called mind. Which you either use poorly or well. When it's used poorly, it's called the ego. When it's used well, it's called the Holy Spirit. So you're not turning it over to some powers that be out there. You know what you're doing? you're turning the problems as well as your very own attention toward the place of excellence in you, the altar in you. And as you do that, you let go of the ego. And the Holy Spirit takes it away, you can say. I want to go back to the beginning of the paragraph now. Do not be afraid of the ego. It does depend on your mind, and as you made it by believing in it, so you can dispel it by withdrawing belief from it. Do not project responsibility for your belief in it onto anyone else, or you will preserve the belief. When you are willing to accept sole responsibility for the ego's existence yourself, you will have laid aside all anger and all attack, because they come from an attempt to project responsibility for your own errors. But, and this is the way you keep from accidentally convicting yourself of doing something awful and wrong that you can then be fooled into thinking you have to pay a penalty for. But having accepted the errors as yours, do not keep them. Give them over quickly to the Holy Spirit to be undone completely, so that all their effects will vanish from your minds and from the sonship as a whole. They'll vanish from the sonship as a whole because you will have withdrawn your investment in them, and you will stop introducing them as extraneous nonsense into the singularity that can't actually be divided. Continuing, the Holy Spirit will teach you to perceive beyond belief, because truth is beyond belief, and His, the Holy Spirit's, perception is true. This is a unifying experience, because the Holy Spirit, being nothing more than your right mind, is your right mind revealing to you truth, which increases your experience of your integrity, your divine integrity, and what you might call the eternal platform of your being from which you be. And so it lifts you above what I'm going to call the poor thought models you had been employing relative to your definition of yourself. Into a broader, more infinite, and therefore more stable and permanent experience of your eternality, of the singularity of you. Now, continuing, the ego can be completely forgotten at any time, because it was always a belief. That is it, totally incredible, not credible. No one can keep a belief he has judged to be unbelievable. Well, if you will, during this next week, remind yourself often that all there is to the ego is you wearing a mask, pretending to be what you aren't, it will be easy for you to say, that is silly, that is a ridiculous thing for me to do. And it's even more ridiculous for me to look at myself in the mask and think that the mask is me and then be afraid of it. It's that simple. And it's that simple to abandon the attention you give to it so that you might feel yourself in your innocence behind the mask and underneath the costume you're wearing. No one can keep a belief he has judged to be unbelievable. The more you learn about the ego, the more you realize that it cannot be believed. The incredible cannot be understood because it is unbelievable. The utter meaningless of all perception that comes from the unbelievable must be apparent. But it is not recognized as beyond belief because it was made by belief. The whole purpose of this course is to teach you that the ego is unbelievable and will forever be unbelievable. You who made the ego by believing the unbelievable cannot make this judgment alone. By accepting atonement for yourself, you are deciding against the belief that you can be alone, thus dispelling the idea of separation and affirming your true identification with the whole kingdom as literally part of you. This identification is as beyond doubt as it is beyond belief. Your wholeness has no limits because being is in infinity. Now, when you are emerging from a state of mind in which you've been using beliefs as the criteria for your understanding and interpretation of life and of being, you have no means available to you within the realm of beliefs to experience what is beyond belief. You're looking through the lens of belief. And so, in order to get beyond beliefs, you have to be willing to take off the belief glasses you're wearing. You have to be willing to abandon the structures of belief as the valid criteria for determining what everything is. And you cannot do this by yourself. You cannot do it from within the framework of being something separate, on your own, independent, and capable of authorizing anything. And so you have to reach beyond belief. That's where turning toward the altar, the place of excellence in you, comes into play. That's where turning toward me, or toward your guide, or toward the Father comes into play. When you reach outside or beyond everything that you believe and say, help, and invite that which is real and that which is in its right mind, that which is awake, in into your environment, into you. What happens when you do that? If you are genuine and if you persist in your desire to be infilled from that which is beyond belief, you will find the divine one that you are underneath the mask and underneath the costume you've adopted beginning to be highlighted, you might say, illuminated to you, so that you have an experience of being that is different from the one you were getting when you were only observing the mask and the costume you had created, which left the you underneath it out of sight and out of mind, as it were. I keep telling you that you aren't what you think you are. I keep telling you that because you do think you are what you think you are. And you're very certain of it, and it's foreign to you to think that maybe you aren't what you think you are. And so I will constantly remind you of this so that you remember to be curious beyond your belief patterns. You know, when the truth is revealed to you as an experience, it isn't that you will now have a new and deeper and fuller and truer awareness of what believing is. You won't believe the truth. You will be knowing the truth. It won't be belief at all. It won't be a new and better belief. It will be knowing with a capital K, or what the Course calls knowledge. But I prefer to use the word knowing now because it's a verb and not a noun. Knowledge can be accumulated because it's an object, you might say. But knowing is a living movement of mind, of awareness, of being conscious. It's living and it's in the now and it's about the now, and it's consistent with the idea of singularity that we've been talking about. Singularity becomes confused when you think you can be a knower who's in possession of knowledge. But knowing the truth is the conscious experience of being it, of it being you, and of all that is characteristic of it, including the fact that it's infinite, that it's all-inclusive, and therefore, because you are having an experience of being truth, you have an experience of not being tiny, of being the infiniteness yourself. You see? Again, the whole purpose of this course is to teach you that the ego is unbelievable and will forever be unbelievable. Now, it isn't trying to teach you this as a bit of knowledge. Its purpose is to move you into an inner act of willingness to yield to that which is outside the framework of your beliefs, so that you will not be met with new knowledge to use, but so that you are met with an experience that is undeniable, an experience of the truth of you, a movement of clarity called knowing. You who made the ego by believing the unbelievable cannot make this judgment alone. By accepting the atonement, in other words, making this invitation and making room for the influx so that your very mind is returned to a conscious state of singularity, you are deciding against the belief that you can be alone, thus dispelling the idea of separation and affirming your true identification with the whole, with the whole kingdom, as literally part of you. This identification, and I'm adding, when experienced, is as beyond doubt as it is beyond belief. Your wholeness has no limits because being is in infinity. I don't want you to worry if you're not getting every single word that I'm saying. What you need to catch is the feeling of the meaning. And then pay attention to that feeling. Nurture it by giving it your attention. Because then the feeling will grow in you. And you might say, uncover itself more fully to you as you continue to give your attention to it. Now, the next section is entitled The Extension of the Kingdom. Only you can limit your creative power, but God wills to release it. He no more wills you to deprive yourself of your creations than he wills to deprive himself of his. Do not withhold your gifts to the sonship, or you withhold yourself from God. Again, you withhold your love from someone else, a love that isn't yours to give alone, but a love that is yours to give if you let it in from the Father. If you withhold it from your brother, you stop the flow from the Father. And so, you withhold yourself from the experience of God. Selfishness is of the ego, but self-fullness is of the soul, because that is how God created it. The Holy Spirit is the part of the mind that lies between the ego and the soul, mediating between them always in favor of the soul. To the ego, this is partiality. Of course, it's leaving the ego out. To the ego, this is partiality, and it therefore responds as if it were the part that is being sided against. To the soul, this is truth, because it knows its fullness and cannot conceive of any part from which it is excluded. Soul. I know what everyone thinks the soul is. It's something you have. It's something that survives death. It's something that came into your body when you were born. It's seen as an object, a thing. But I'm telling you that soul is the sensing capacity of mind. It is the mind's capacity, with a capital M, the mind's capacity to sense, feel, the capital M meaning set in place by the Father in every aspect of creation. Soul is your capacity to recognize God in each and everything. The soul knows that the consciousness of all its brothers is included in its own as it is included in God. The power of the whole sonship and of its creator is therefore the soul's own fullness, rendering its creations equally whole and equal in perfection. Its creations, and I'm not reading from the book, its creations are what you could call the affirmation of God that it senses / feels in each and everything, its recognition of God in each and everything as an experience, not an idea, not a thought, not a belief. You might say, confirms creation and extends it thereby. Soul, which is you, never creates separate from God. And I will keep bringing this to your attention because the ego in each of you would like to arrive at a point of having the power of God for divine good reasons so as to be able to do things on your own without asking God about it. And that will never be the experience. Continuing, the ego cannot prevail against a totality which includes God, and any totality must include God. Everything he created is given all his power because it is part of him and shares his being with him. Creating is the opposite of loss, as blessing is the opposite of sacrifice. Being must be extended. That is how it retains the knowledge of itself. Soul extends being by confirming God in everything, by being the constant conscious, I will say the constant living conscious awareness of what God is being, right there and right there and right there and everywhere infinitely. Creation, which God is being, is extended by the confirmation of it that occurs when consciousness recognizes God somewhere. And when you are awake, being itself is the conscious experience of recognizing God everywhere simultaneously, fully, infinitely, gloriously. It doesn't matter that you might not be able to translate this at the moment into your daily experience. The premise must be laid before anything can be built upon it. And that's what is happening right now. Being must be extended. That is how it retains the knowledge of itself. That's how the singularity persists, if I may use that word. The soul, your capacity to feel, recognize God in each and everything, yearns to share its being as its creator did. It doesn't want to withhold the acknowledgement of it. It wants to express it infinitely. It wants to express the joy of the experience infinitely, and it does it spontaneously. Created by sharing, its will, meaning the soul's will, is to create. It does not wish to contain God, but to extend His being. And it extends it again by sharing it. It is as though the soul is a light bulb that glows brighter and extends in light the joy of the experience of the meaning of God discovered in each and everything forever. It is almost as though it broadcasts it in pulses of illumination. Illumination imbued with joy. Continuing, the extension of God's being is the soul's only function. Its fullness cannot be contained any more than can the fullness of its creator. Fullness is extension. Now, the ego's whole thought system blocks extension, and thus blocks your only function. You notice it didn't say the soul's only function? It's letting you know that the soul's only function is your only function. Again, you can't project the soul out there along with the Holy Spirit or the ego and talk about it and what it does. None of this means a thing if it doesn't relate to you. If it isn't being brought home to you, that soul is you, that love is you, that mind, with a capital M, that is God, is you, that you are the Christ. Again, the ego's whole thought system blocks extension and thus blocks your only function. It therefore blocks your joy, and that is why you perceive yourselves as unfulfilled. Unless you create, you are unfulfilled. Well, how do you neglect to create? By having something else more important than to discover, recognize, and acknowledge God in each and everything. You've got business to attend to. You've got concerns to deal with. You've got problems to solve. You see? Unless you create, you are unfulfilled. But God does not know of unfulfillment, and therefore you must create. You may not know your own creations, but this can no more interfere with their reality than your unawareness of your soul can interfere with its being. In other words, no matter how you define yourself, no matter how limited it is, what you divinely are continues to be what it divinely is, and it continues to fulfill its function. And it does this while you have a preoccupation with a daydream, so to speak, where you're not paying any attention at all to what is going on around you, and you give all of your attention to your imagination. Just like a student looking out the window and daydreaming, who doesn't hear what the teacher is saying, doesn't change the fact that the teacher is saying something and the student is actually at his desk in the classroom. Continuing, the kingdom is forever extending because it is in the mind of God. You do not know your joy because you do not know your own self-fullness. Exclude any part of the kingdom from yourself, and surprise, surprise, you are not whole. And that's what you find yourself preoccupied with. Exclude any part of the kingdom from yourself, and you are not whole. Well, how do you exclude the kingdom? What? The kingdom of what? The kingdom of heaven. How do you exclude reality? By giving it a different definition, by calling it the world and universe, a material event in a physical universe. That's how you exclude the kingdom, by refusing to see it for what it really is and giving preference to the definition you've made up about it. A split mind cannot perceive its fullness and needs the miracle of its wholeness to dawn upon it and heal it. This reawakens the wholeness in it and restores it to the kingdom because of its acceptance of wholeness. Okay, now we have another word that can help you to understand the meaning of the word singularity. It's wholeness. Undivided wholeness is singularity. The miracle of the wholeness of mind needs to dawn upon the mind and heal it. This reawakens the wholeness in it. As a thought or an idea? No, as an experience. An experience that you can have in a grocery store or wherever you are, where all of a sudden you are immense. And in the immenseness of what you are, everything about the grocery store is included in you and is part of you, while at the same time being a part of God and being a part of the wholeness of infinite singularity, of infinite being. This reawakens the wholeness in it and restores it to the kingdom because of its acceptance of wholeness. Speaking of the mind that lets the miracle of wholeness dawn on it. The full appreciation of its self-fullness makes selfishness impossible and extension inevitable. Why? Why does it make extension inevitable? Because the experience is so glorious that you can't keep your mouth shut. You can't keep your being shut. Your being pulses with the spontaneous generation of light that is imbued with joy, that is experienced, you might say broadcast, infinitely, instantaneously. Continuing, that is why there is perfect peace in the kingdom. Every soul is fulfilling its function, and only complete fulfillment is peace. Peace is the fundamental of the singularity of being. Peace that is not flawed by anything extraneous to it. Now, it doesn't say that is why there will be perfect peace in the kingdom. It doesn't say every soul will fulfill its function. It says that is why there is perfect peace in the kingdom. Every soul is fulfilling its function, and only complete fulfillment is peace. I need to remind you again that the divine one that you are, who's having this little fantasy of not being divine, is fulfilling its function perfectly and infinitely. It's important to understand this because, as I've said before, you're neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You are at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. If you will accept this statement as an absolute fact, you will abandon any practices you have been engaging in to try to improve yourself and to become equal to something that you aren't yet, to become something more than you are at the moment. Waking up is a matter of abandoning the doubt and the tiny sense of yourself, so that you might have available to you the full experience of what you divinely are, that you are at this moment. So this has less to do with learning than it does with a willingness to yield in to a greater experience of what you are, which you can yield into because it's already present and fully functioning. You know what? Ultimately, problems are solved by abandoning the attempt to solve them, by abandoning the position of a presence that can solve problems by itself, by virtue of skill it develops, and instead, right in the apparent presence of the problem, desiring to experience what's really going on in its wholeness right now, to experience what you are in your wholeness right now, rather than working out the resolution of all the little mistakes you have made in your mind that have brought about this situation that is a problem for you, so that you might rearrange your beliefs and improve your beliefs and correct all of these little misperceptions and thereby be free of the problem, because you have been skillful on your own. You abandon that whole attempt. You abandon every attempt to reinforce what you think you are, and you say, Holy Spirit, meaning myself with a capital S, Holy Spirit, I desire to experience the wholeness of what I am and the wholeness of what I am being right now, in spite of the fact that I thought I was something else that was far less. I desire to be infilled and illuminated with what I am fully being, divinely speaking, right now. Or even better put, I desire to experience what the Father is being fully of Himself right here where I am. And you invite it in, and you let the desire for the influx of the experience hold more importance, be more paramount to you than the act of defense that you would go through by trying to improve your mind and your beliefs by correcting the beliefs with improved beliefs, and thus manipulating correction of the problem into being by virtue of an act of will on your part and concentration. And focused effort that afterwards you will be able to look back on and say, I did well. I did well. And all the time, you will never have abandoned the separated sense of existence. Because you will have never desired to have the experience of the infinite divine one that you are at this moment, that God is being right there where you are at this moment, in which you are being whole and wholly involved in the joyous extension of it, because of the spontaneous joy that is experienced when you've let yourself be your real function. Now, I am aware that these words could be called airy-fairy, but I am conveying to you a feeling that I want you to catch. It's a feeling about reality. And it's also a feeling about what you are. And it's a feeling of what the function of being what you are is, together with the very clear statement that I'm making, that right now, you, in spite of what you think you're doing, are engaged in being what you divinely are. Because you are, and because it is going on, you can dare to be curious to experience it and invite the experience in and give preference to inviting the experience over the preference to be a successful problem solver on your own. Continuing, insanity. Insanity is forgetting that all there is to the ego is you wearing a mask. and believing that your mask and costume are what you are and determine how you must be. Insanity appears to add to reality. Certainly it appears to add a mask, and it appears to add a costume, doesn't it, that God didn't make. Insanity appears to add to reality, but no one would claim that what it adds is true. Insanity is therefore the non-extension of truth, which blocks joy, because it blocks creation, and thus blocks self-fulfillment. If you're miserable, you're having an insane experience. If you're miserable, it means that you have not been engaged in extending the kingdom. It means you have not been engaged in desiring to be the evidence of love. The unfulfilled must be depressed because their self-fullness is unknown to them. Your creations, and I'm adding the word however, are protected for you because the Holy Spirit who is in your mind knows of them and can bring them into your awareness whenever you will let him. They are there as part of your own being because your fulfillment includes them. The creations of every Son of God are yours, since every creation belongs to everyone, being created for the sonship as a whole. When you have an aha experience in which the divinity of being has registered with you more fully than ever before, and it is transformational in you, you spontaneously radiate the joy of that experience. And it is radiated without reservation. Like light, it moves in every direction endlessly, just because it's not directed specifically here or specifically there. The joy of being radiates to the whole sonship. It is therefore an all-inclusive act, not by design, but by virtue of the nature of joy, which, like the nature of light, expands in all directions just because. Now, this is important. You have not failed to add to the inheritance of the sons of God, and thus have not failed to secure it for yourselves. If it was the will of God to give it to you, He gave it forever. If it was His will that you have it forever, He gave you the means for keeping it, and you have done so. Now, mind you, I want you to continue to feel for the meaning of singularity as I talk about it. What has just been said here is an expression of singularity. Singularity has no ifs, ands, or buts, no maybes, no what ifs. Listen to this. If it was the will of God to give it to you, He gave it forever. If it was His will that you have it forever, He gave you the means for keeping it, and you have done so. That's the singularity. Ooh, you know what though? That sounds like you're being controlled. Man, if God gave it to you, you've got it. No choice about it. And if part of what he gave you was the function of extending it, and you're extending it because that's the way it works, well, that's being controlled too. There's no choice about it. This is why you don't abandon your egos quickly, because man, oh man, you want options and you think you have a right to options. But when you claim the right to options, you are actively denying singularity. And when you deny singularity and imaginatively opt for something else, you introduce chaos. You introduce fragmentation. And it's a miserable experience. By law, it's a miserable experience. By virtue of the fact that everything operates according to the laws of singularity, when you attempt to do what you cannot do, it is a miserable experience. Continuing, disobeying God's will is meaningful only to the insane. In truth, it is impossible. And I will add that since in truth it is impossible, you have not succeeded in doing it. And therefore, you are not guilty of having done it. And you do not need to pay a penalty for being guilty. You simply need to stop behaving as though you are the mask you have put on in front of your real face, and start behaving as the real one that's behind the mask. Continuing, your self-fullness is as boundless as God's. Like His, it extends forever and in perfect peace. Its radiance is so intense that it creates in perfect joy, and only the whole can be born of its wholeness. Now, listen to this. Be confident that you have never lost your identity and the extensions which maintain it in wholeness and peace. Miracles are an expression of this confidence. They are reflections both of your own proper identification with your brothers and of your own awareness that your identification is maintained by extension. This is the truth about you. Now, it is as though you are a light bulb putting out a billion megawatts of light. That has a cover over it with little holes in the cover. And so only 20 watts of light emerges. And the 20 watts of light is what you are confident you are. And I'm telling you that megawatts of light are what you are already. And all you have to do is begin to conceive of yourself that way. Begin to accept the idea that the ultimate is what you already are, and that it is in full, for lack of better words, full effulgence at this moment. And all that's necessary is for you to remember that all there is to the ego is you wearing a mask, so that you can determine to take off the mask. And you take off the mask by going within to that place of excellence in you, to the altar, and you ask the Holy Spirit, you ask the Father. You say, I desire to feel, to experience the wholeness of what I divinely am at this moment, even though, to my sense, that isn't what I am at this moment. I will make room for the experience because I want it, and I ask you to help me have it. That is where we will stop today. If you think that I have said many abstract things today, don't be fooled. They might have sounded that way to you, but they were very specific and they were very pointed, and they will have the effect of triggering light bulbs going on in your mind as the week progresses. I'm simply asking you to be willing to consider the possibility that the abstract things you think I said might have the most profound and practical relevancy to the specifics of your life this week. Okay, I love you all, and I look forward to being with you next week.